What's going on? Welcome to the Common Geeking Program, a book club podcast where each week the three of us read up on a topic. Well, in this case, we watched up on a topic, and Colin and I played up on a topic 10 years ago. And then we're going to discuss it from a geeky, nerdy perspective. This week, I am your host, Patrick, and we will be discussing Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2, probably the greatest video game to ever grace the PlayStation 1.
Fun friggity frickin' fact, one, I played it on the Sega Dreamcast, but two, it is like top five rated video games of all time. Just putting that
because
out there.
Because it's amazing.
Because it's fucking amazing. Spoiler alert for the rating section. Go ahead. Anyway.
I'm joined by two people, each of whom has selected a domain that they think connects to the topic of Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2, and this week they are...
Hello, my name is Colin Gorilla Radio Ketchin.
Turn that shit up.
I'm going to Bob Burnquist Zent, Middle Earth Shadow of Mordor by J. Rodney Mullen Tolkien. Just kidding. It's by a game studio called Monolith based on the Lord of the Rings.
Can you imagine if Rodney Mullen wrote that shit?
I just would have liked how Orome, the freaking Ainur who would ride all over the place on his horse, was actually known for his sick kick flips.
Yeah.
That is a beautiful AU, and I hope that you start a Kickstarter to make this happen.
A kickflip starter? Let's go.
A kickflip starter.
Oh, no. Hi, I'm Genevieve. I don't have any other cool names, but I will be repping the 1999 movie Deep Blue Sea, which is... about people who, in their quest for an Alzheimer's cure, make super intelligent sharks who then fuck some shit up.
Do they literally fuck shit up?
Let's save that for her domain because I'm going to be freaking rapt. But I'm hooked. I'm okay. Seriously hooked on that.
You know what else I'm hooked on, Colin?
A feeling?
Phonics?
Well, yes, but more so the... song Superman by Goldfinger, which I heard for the first time playing Tony Hawk Pro Skater. Let's go.
Oh, snap. Aww. Look at that.
Such musical memories.
Do we have a theme for today's episode? We do. I'm prompting you.
That is correct, Colin. The theme that I am going at Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 with is the realism of the game and how I think that negatively affects the public opinion of skateboarding as a whole.
Fair all enough. Right. Well, my game, Middle Earth, Shadow of War, has very little impact on the public opinion of skateboarding, so I hope I don't get points deducted.
You know, Colin, I think your experience with skateboarding personally in real life is the reason why you have a negative connotation.
Well, nope. Hey, listen. It was 10 minutes. I got it off the ground.
You did get it off the ground, and then you ended up on the ground.
I still maintain I achieved altitude.
I will tell you that if you had stayed on the board, you would have done an ollie, yes.
These are semantics. Listen, this has gotten off the rails. Why don't we press the Y button to grind back on them?
Oh, no.
You should never pick a topic I know stuff about. I will make it hell.
But I like this topic it's too much so to let you destroy it. But anyway, we're going to start by summarizing the topic of Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 and the domains that each of my lovely guests have decided to represent here before we openly discuss all of these connections and themes that we possibly can connect. Finally, we are going to have the rating section to determine who best contributed, who made my brain turn to mush the most, and whether today's topic is enjoyable. All right. So, dear listener, let me take you back to...
He's a phantom.
Yeah. Let me take you back to September 19th in the year 2000. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 has just launched on the PlayStation Original, the Xbox Original, and Dreamcast?
I had it on the Sega Dreamcast.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. And then there was eventually an N64 port. Game Boy Advance even. So they really wanted this bitch to be popular as hell.
That Game Boy Advance port is fun, but not the same game.
That's true. In this game, though, you get to take command of a pro skater. And you go through different levels in shifts of 2 minutes to try to get as many points as possible to collect all these different things. And your goal is ultimately to make it to the end of the game, unlock everything, and just, like, become the biggest badass skater in the world.
The campaign consists of, I think, 8 levels. 5 of them give you, like, objectives, like collect a bunch of stuff and get a bunch of points. Yeah. And 3 of them are, like, competitions where you have to do fancy shit and be the best that there ever was.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, you only technically have to get 3rd in order to...
Be the 3rd best that there ever was is a much better hook. I'm sorry.
Yeah, for the most part, the rest of the objectives are to get points, to collect the letters S-K-A-T-E, to, like, find a secret hidden tape
somewhere. We are
hooked
on phonics. Jonavi was right.
Yeah.
And for me, this game is really what, like, prompted me to want to start skating in real life, which is a lot harder than the video game makes it look.
Well, why would that be?
Nani.
Why do you think that?
I was like, wait, I can't just press left square to do a kickflip in real life?
They didn't have the technology yet.
Yeah, it's pretty rough, especially because, you know, it was left X on the Sega Dreamcast, but whatever.
The Sega Dreamcast is one of the worst consoles in the world.
Whoa.
We're going to save that for another episode, ladies and gents.
You need to settle this with a rap battle.
We already had a rap battle versus about video game consoles. I don't think we can do another one, so I'm just going to let the beef.
Oh, all right.
Let the beef.
Anyway, in
cool
this
down.
Game, though,
marinade.
You get to play as a bunch of different pro skaters. So, like, you get to pick somebody who's better at flat ground, like Rodney Mullen. You can do, like, Bob Burnquist, who's a vert guy.
You get Tony Hawk and Steve Caballero and Jamie Thomas. That was my boy.
And these were all real people, yes?
These are all real people.
Real people.
Elisa Steamer, the first pro girl skater.
You could also unlock Spider-Man. Jury is out on whether he is real. I am conducting investigations.
You could also get that the cop, right?
Officer Dick.
Officer Dick, which, when you go to the school level as Officer Dick... Tony Hawk starts driving around the golf cart instead of him.
Really?
It's pretty fucking sick.
Never
anyway,
that.
In this game, though, like, the whole point of skating in this game is to get the gnarliest, super high scoring combo that you can possibly get. So, like, you're supposed to be stringing your tricks together with manuals, doing flips into grinds, grinding and then flipping out too, and just, like, making this huge combo. And that's really not how, like, pro skating works in terms of scoring, obviously. Like, yes, it's cool to see people do wicked technical tricks, like doing flips into manuals, into grinds, and flipping out. But the vast majority of, like, skate parts and competitions are just made up of stringing together, like, one really cool line where maybe you flip into a grind and then that's your trick. So I had you guys watch a bunch of videos which kind of showed how real skaters work, and if I was going to compare Tony Hawk Pro Skater to any real skater, it would probably be Shane O'Neill, who was probably the most technical skater nowadays, though, besides Rodney Mullen himself, who is pretty old. But the way that he skates is not like he goes for the biggest gaps. He doesn't go for the, like, ramps at all. He's purely a street skater.
Yeah.
And... he does a lot of those flipping, like he does a kickflip into a back nose blunt, and he'll, like, somehow manage to do another flip trick out, which is really, really hard to set your feet up to do a trick while you're trying to balance on a rail or something.
Yeah.
Like, he just has that massive balance.
There's a contrast between the reality and the game itself. In the game, whenever you beat a campaign, because you can beat all those same different stages and skate parks with the different pro skaters available to you, and whenever you beat them, you get... like a video reel of them doing tricks in real life. And Jamie Thomas at the time was known for the leap of faith. Like, he had, like, the biggest, like, vert landing, like, jump off of something. He had one of the biggest. Like, it was just like, yeah, he would make big jumps and land them and not fall. And like,
he jumped down like the biggest stairs possible. And actually, he didn't actually land that one.
Yeah.
But he came the closest to doing it.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. It's like, because in the game, everything is about like, get the longest combos you can. So jump on a rail, jump onto another rail, roll on some of your wheels and get all the stuff strung together. Yeah. But all these videos are like showing the pro skaters you're playing as doing one trick at a time.
Yeah.
And everyone being so freaking pumped about it. Cause
it's all about doing like the biggest trick you possibly can. Mm-hmm. Like the gnarliest, people would be scared to even try it. But, like, in Tony Hawk, when you're doing these long combos, in real life, if you were to grind a rail and then try to jump onto another rail and keep going, you'd be losing speed constantly.
Which is...
And in the game, yeah, you speed
you
up.
You pick up speed.
Yeah.
God, that fucking outer ring on the Mexico level, the one with the bull in it.
Yeah.
We would play the multiplayer, me and my siblings, where we would play tag, where we have to, like, get as much... We have to do tricks on levels. It's basically like Splatoon. You do tricks on parts of the levels to turn them your color. And the more points you get, the harder it is for someone to steal that color from you. So yeah. I would just grind on that outer circle, jumping from rail to rail for like 5 minutes at a time. And you're a fucking comet by the end of it. You're going so fast.
It's pretty like unrealistic in that sense because the physics just straight up don't work. And also... Like, in real life, when you fall from a really big height, you're probably going to break something. In the game, you just get up, brush yourself off, you keep going.
Yeah, I wish in real life I could tap the A button faster to stand up from my life-altering injury.
Yeah. Like, there's this one dude, Aaron Jossimoki. He is famous for jumping down huge sets of stairs off of roofs, off of anything, really. And he actually broke or, like, tore his Achilles tendon. During one of the tricks that he did,
I got a friend
still landed
did
it, rode away like he's a total badass.
That is some Tom Cruise skateboarding commitment.
But like really in real life skating, there are kind of two camps. There's the technical camp and just the gnarly camp.
The gnarly camp.
Pretty much like people who get off on just like seeing. There's this entire YouTube channel called House of Meat where they... Or the Hall of Meat, rather. They only show clips of skaters falling, like, busting their heads open, knocking teeth out, just, like, breaking a whole bunch of shit. And people get off on that because they're like, holy shit, that guy tried a really hard thing and messed it up. Gotta love it. Anyway, there are people who really like that. And then there are people who really like the, what's his name? The
when,
Shane O'Neill's
when they succeed.
Of the world. Yeah. Well, no, like, not even when they succeed. Like, it's cool to watch somebody do a kickflip over, like, a hip or, like, doing a manual across a bunch of different platforms. But, like, when you watch Shane O'Neill skate or, like, when you watch Nyjah skate in a competition and he's, like, doing a nollie flip into a crooked grind and then he, like, inward heels out or some shit like that. It's really cool to just see someone who can possibly have the technique and the coordination in order to string all those tricks together. But realistically, you will never get close to a combo from Tony Hawk just because it's impossible to keep that speed going without breaking the combo and having to push to get more speed.
Did you, when you first played the game, like, do you think it gave you unrealistic ideas of what you would be able to do? Like, for you personally?
For me, it was just like, I thought it would be a lot easier to do all the tricks because, like, you just roll up and start jumping and doing whatever you want. But, like, the fact that in this game, when you're just rolling around, you never have to set up for a trick. You just, like, pop an ollie and you do it. In real life, you have to set your feet certain ways. You have to, like, know the timing and flicking the trick and everything, which is why a game like Skate, which was made by EA, where you had to control both feet with each stick on the controller, that was a lot more realistic, and that gave me a better idea.
Yeah, it was like a puppeteering system. I had a similar experience, even though I haven't taken to skating, but I know my brother did after Tony Hawk for a while, because he was so cool, but when we look at something like Skate, that puppeteering system is supposed to mirror real-life actions. I still don't think it fully prepares you, but it does give you a better analog. I will say that, like, as someone whose interest in skateboarding initially came from Tony Hawk, I don't think I ever, like, did a 900 Christ air thinking, yeah, this is something people do in real life.
Everything I saw on, like, Vert, I never thought I'd do because it just, like, that was too high for me or anything, but I thought I'd be able to just, like, get a skateboard, start rolling around doing flatland tricks.
for the uninitiated listener, vert means those big half pipe and quarter pipe like tubes.
Much any ramp.
So that you go up a ramp, and the tricks are based on how high in the air you can go. Flatland slash street is just like, you know, curbs, street rails, staircases, things
like that. And then you got tranny, which is transition skating, which goes between the two. Like, you'll go off a quarter pipe, and then you'll go in the air, do a grab trick where you grab the board, and then you'll land with all that speed you just generated from jumping into the air, and then you'll use that speed to go down a set of stairs or to, like, grind down a rail or something.
Mm-hmm. Wheelie parkour.
And that's what...
Wheelie parkour.
I mean, that was my thought watching the Tony Hawk, like, the videos that you sent us.
Yeah.
I could not get wheelie parkour out of my head because...
I want to talk a little bit about the Nora video I had you guys watch of Nora Vasconcelos. She's like a pretty big face in skateboarding now because she's such a prominent like girl skater. She rips harder than a lot of people, boy or girl now. She inspires a lot of people to like get out and start skating, which is really sick. But she's a prominent like transition skater, and she does a lot of things that most people would be scared to do. Anyway, the fact that they only had one girl skater in the game is pretty realistic for the time because not a lot of women felt comfortable going to a skate park. They thought they'd be judged. They thought they'd be bullied. But nowadays, we're starting to see an uptick in women who want to start skating. Like,
I will say that when I was a kid, my little sister was way tougher than me. Because, like, I would try to do stuff on my rollerblades because I was cool. And my brother would get her to do stuff on the skateboard, and like she looked way cooler doing it than I did. So from a very young age, I was not really buying the single female skater in Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 just because of my own personal shame.
Yeah, we're slowly moving towards a type of environment where people have to stop saying chick skater and they just say skater.
Yeah,
because there's
one last thing you mentioned. I don't know if you want to bring it up now. You're talking about Tony Hawk's Underground and the ability to get off the board. Do you want to do that in the summary or in the discussion?
I guess we could just mention it in that, like, there's also... This is more prominent in something like King of the Road, which is a competition between skate companies. I guess they just send like a bunch of skaters out on the road and Thrasher gives them a bunch of challenges to do. And a lot of the times, like, you'll even have Mike Vallely is a really old guy who used to do this. They get off their board mid like line, which is just stringing tricks together, and they'll jump back onto the board, onto a rail, or like do something cool like that. That's called a caveman. And Tony Hawk's Underground was the first time you could get off the board and like run around and like climb up and do actual parkour and then get back on your board. So it was really cool.
Assassin's Creed skateboard.
When they added all that stuff. But yeah, I think we should pretty soon. But you can ask your question real quick. But
oh, no, I was just thinking because Colin said Assassin's Creed skateboard, like what games would benefit from the addition of skateboarding mechanics?
I'll tell you that Kingdom Hearts 2 definitely benefited from adding a skateboard into it.
I love you so much. I'm giving you any chance of Gold Star student I might get because that question is amazing. Can we please spend half our discussion AUing various games and franchises into how they would improve from skateboard mechanics? You don't have to answer now. I'm just putting it out there. I love that.
Okay. All right. We can move on a la schedule constraints.
Well, yeah, that's pretty much what I wanted to talk about for Tony Hawk and how it's real or not real. So let's go on to the domains. We're going to start out with Colin. What you got for me?
I am changing my topic to what Johnavy suggested, and I will simply be superimposing skateboarding into various video games. Actually, though, I'm going to talk about Middle-Earth Shadow of War, which is also a very Assassin's Creed-like property. In 2014, Studio Monolith, a pretty reputable game developer, came out with a game called Middle-Earth Shadow of Mordor. If you do not know, those are terms from The Lord of the Rings and their accompanying J.R.R. Tolkien universe. I will not bore you with all the details of this universe because that's not why I'm talking about it. The theme of this is like realism of the game versus reality. I do not want to make you think The Lord of the Rings is realistic. I do not think it is. But this game has something very cool called the Nemesis System. It was introduced in the 2014 Shadow of Mordor game. 2017's Middle-Earth Shadow of War expounded upon it. And what the Nemesis System does is it takes what would be a typical brawler action-adventure game, which is the core of these games, and it makes it a little more personal, a little more dynamic, and a little more interesting. So if you compare this to a game like Assassin's Creed or like Batman Arkham Asylum, both of which have similar combat styles, you have a game that is in an open world and there's orcs everywhere. Cool. But these orcs remember you.
Cool.
When these orcs remember you when you fight them. The Nemesis System is a framework where there are randomly generated orc appearances, orc names, titles, and a bunch of stuff, so that when you encounter them, you always get something different. And depending on how you behave when you fight them, that will change the way the game flows. It's got a strategy element where you can see the army for a given area, and your job is to take over that area. You do that by fighting people to take over them with some mind control shit. Again, not going to get into that. Your character also Spooky. Doesn't die. When he dies, he comes back to life. Also not going to get into that. But because of that, there are orcs who kill you, and then when you come across them again, they're like, didn't I kill you last time? Why don't you stay down? And I'm just like, I'm just playing a video game, sir. Could you please not accost me like this? And
I'm feeling so attacked.
And basically, the game's combat system intuitively pits people against you in a way you might expect in the real world. Not that I'm expecting people to come at me with a sword on the street, but that if I piss somebody off, they're going to remember it, and it's going to affect how I deal with them in the future. They remember if you shot them with an arrow versus if you burned them alive. And this is made possible by a tremendous amount of underlying framework. Like, I have it pulled up here. All the characteristics they set up, they're broken down by names, by visuals, by relationships, power levels, traits, location, hierarchy, ranks, advanced class, attack. Like, there's so much that it randomly uses to make these people. But the fact that they react to you based on how you interacted makes it feel personal. A little anecdote. I opened a loot box in the game, and I got a guy, I think his name
was... Did you have to pay for that loot box?
I did not, because they responded to the controversy with deftness. And the guy I got, I think his name was Doogs, and he was helping me out. I recruited him, and he was helping me. And I fought another orc, and I lost. But that guy didn't kill me. He was like, you're pathetic! And then he just walked away, and it says I was humiliated. And then Doogs was like, why should I follow you? He's basically like, you're a little bitch. And I'm like, all right. So then he betrayed me. And the thing is, he had a combat style that I'm not good at fighting. So I kept losing to him in combat. By the end of this, he was the freaking overlord of this entire area just because I got embarrassed in front of him. And it took me so long to beat him because... if people only get more powerful when you lose to them, the people who are good at killing you are always going to advance in rank. So it takes this typical combat system and makes it so personal. And I think the reason I wanted to bring it is it's almost like an inverse of what Tony Hawk does, where I think Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 did a lot of looking at a very real thing and said, cool, let's take this concept and blow it up. Let's make it bigger. Let's make it a game. Because that's really what Tony Hawk is. Tony Hawk Underground 2 I've also spent a lot of time in. If you think that game is anywhere close to a semblance of reality, you're insane. That game is ridiculous, top to bottom. But it's all based on this core idea, where Middle Earth takes a fantastical idea and says, how do we bring this a little closer to reality? Mm-hmm. And games are always trying to get a little more realistic in terms of like aesthetic and character motivation, but this does
gotta maintain a spectacle.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this game found a really interesting way of maintaining that spectacle, maintaining that cinematic quality while still injecting something that feels real. Because I'm never gonna forget how some orc made me look like a punk ass bitch, and it made me waste 3 hours in this place as a result.
Dude, that's what happens to Tony Hawk too. Like, you lose to somebody in a competition and then you're just like, fuck, everybody thinks I'm a loser.
That's true, but in Tony Hawk, they didn't actually try to, like, emasculate me in front of my followers.
Definitely not. Well, I mean, in the Underground games, they started to, like, throw a lot of trash talk, but...
That's fair. But yeah, that's the core premise. It's pretty dense, but the game is super interesting. I still haven't beaten it, and I have a lot of feelings about what they do with Shelob in that game and their interpretation of the world, but that's okay. Call it out.
All right, well, you know, as realistic as killing orcs and them calling you a little baby bitch,
it's pretty close to real life.
I would, if I met an orc in real life, I'm sure they would call me a bitch.
They probably for sure would.
But, or maybe they'd say it in whatever language orcish
well,
is.
Well, they don't speak orcish. They typically speak the language of Mordor, the Black Tongue, or Common, which is... I'll stop.
Oh, no.
That's what you make me feel, Colin. You make me feel like that. Anyway, Jonathan, why don't you let me know all about this Alzheimer curing shark fucking upitude?
All right. So, I did some thinking about realism in media, and you know, I was kind of on a marine kick, so I decided that the thing to rep here was Deep Blue Sea, which is also intrigued me because it was released just about a year before Tony Hawk Pro Skater was released. Because you said it was 2000, right?
2000.
So, yeah, so this movie came out in 1999, so I was like, all right, same time period, same kind of general laissez-faire attitude
general
towards...
laissez-faire attitude?
Yeah, realism and stuff in general. But I thought it would be a good choice because... All right, I'll explain the premise of the movie like I'm supposed to be doing. there's a group of researchers at like a marine lab facility thing who, in their quest to try and cure Alzheimer's, have genetically modified some sharks to, you know, stimulate brain growth. Because science.
That does make a tremendous amount of sense.
Yes. For a number of reasons. Because, like, the closest thing to people is sharks, clearly. But, yeah. So what happens is that the sharks, you know, become more intelligent and go through this escape plot wherein they, like, they're doing various things to attack the researchers, flood the facility so they can escape out into the ocean. And they don't want that to happen because if these sharks breed, then you have all these, like, super malicious, attacky sharks everywhere. And, yeah. So they solve the problem at the end where the last shark is about to escape, and they get a harpoon onto the shark, and then they send, like, an electric, like, I don't know. It's really strange. But essentially, they explode the shark by remotely detonating this harpoon explosive with like an electric charge, and then the shark explodes really big. Everything explodes as things are supposed to at the end of movies, and that's how they end up solving this problem. So from a gratuitous movie explosions perspective, from a how science works in the real life perspective, and from a like human would you really behave that way in that situation way? Like, this hits all the marks for, like, I don't think that's very realistic. So.
On a scale of 1 to, I don't even know what the top would be. On a scale from 1 to Dr. Evil,
mm-hmm.
How do you describe these sharks in terms of a danger to a person? Like, if laser shark...
is up there.
Motherfucker is the top.
Well, okay, so the...
Do-do-do laser.
The main conceit of the movie is that, like, oh, because sharks are, like, naturally vicious creatures, just because you make them smarter, like, you'll just give them another weapon with which they can, like, you know, attack
murder
people. And
with.
The only thing that we had, like, as an advantage to sharks... was, like, you know, being smarter than them and stuff like that.
And being able to breathe air?
Well, I mean, in a marine environment, the sharks have the advantage.
This is true.
Smart. So, I don't know. So that was the whole point of like, oh, you're playing God. If you make these smart sharks, you'll ruin everything. But really, like, I think that it's certainly a bit of a leap that the sharks would be so intelligent right from the start, because they exhibit behavior that you could only like learn from experience, and they haven't had that much experience yet. Well, because see, that's the kind of thing that gets me, because what stuck out to you guys in like the Tony Hawk things were, it wasn't that, oh, there's magical tapes floating in midair that you can run into, like, because you accept that as a mechanic. So, yeah. I mean, when I'm watching a movie like this, all right, I'm already willing to come far to accept a mechanic. Like, okay, you have super intelligent sharks for some magic science reason. So, I don't know. I believe that in the end, the sharks were not that dangerous, because it's a very transparent movie in that you can see, like, oh, we're going to make this happen for dramatic effect. So it ends up that if you, like, track the movie from the shark's perspective, which would have been a more interesting movie in my mind, like, even if they had a more human analog vision, it would have... Sorry about that. I got a call. But anyway, like, I didn't like that the sharks were used as props in this movie more than, like, a main thing. But that's pretty common of thriller type of movies and horror-ish. I struggle to answer your question because the movie was, like, frankly not a great movie but still entertaining. But yeah, there are just so many elements of, like, wait, what in the movie that I thought that it fit in well with our idea of, like, this promotes an unrealistic, like, weird understanding of how things work. Because if you start thinking that neurological researchers are going to start doing shit like that, like, okay, we have a societal problem. I know, but Jurassic Park wasn't even about making an animal, like, smarter. It wasn't about curing anything. It was just like, oh, we want to bring these creatures back.
Let's monetize this. Fucking capitalism.
Exactly. So, I mean, at least that was realistic. I mean, yeah. I totally feel like people would commodify that, but... So, yeah. I would say that I would rate these sharks a 5 on our scale.
On a scale of 1 to laser, it's 5.
On a 1 to laser, it's a 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can dig that. Okay, we're back. And with all of our topics, I read this every single time and we never change it. With all of our topic.
Here's the thing. I've heard your complaints. I don't really care, because nobody else is stepping up to write a podcast.
I'm aware of that. I'm just saying I never go back and edit the document to just make it with our topic and domain summarized.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying, you are not the... I've been listening to all the complaints that you guys have lobbied against my script and just been like, nom, 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 just like eating it up lately. I've really been enjoying it, just like, well, none of you are going to fix it, so I'm just going to enjoy the havoc I have wrought.
Anywho, I'm going to fix it after this, so fuck you.
Aw.
With our topic and domain summarized, though, let's move to the discussion. So...
Yeah, it's a discussion.
I have one question for Jonavi right off the bat.
Yes.
Which video games would be improved by including skateboards?
Do you think your movie is the precursor to Sharknado?
I think that it was tailing off of Jaws, and it was... not a precursor to Sharknado, but doing like an expose on the evolution of shark-based, slightly trashy films would be pretty interesting. So I think it falls into that general category, but I do not think that Sharknado takes the same approach to, all right, how do we scare people with sharks but make it more ridiculous?
I need to be completely honest. I have never seen Sharknado, nor have I seen your movie. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, some of the sharks from your movie got so smart that they realized they could traverse the land by swimming in circles to create a vortex, and that's where the tornado comes from.
Oh, so you're saying that the sharks created
the
tornado.
I'm saying, like, they're literally part of the same universe. Not that the movie inspired the other movie. It's that they're in the same universe.
Oh, I see. I mean, I enjoy that idea, so I'm going to take it. Okay. And, like, now that's part of my brain.
Johnny, did you ever listen to our episode on Johnny Mnemonic prior to your joining the show?
I do not believe so, no.
Because it sounds, Pat, I don't want to, you know, shit on your parade over there, but it sounds a little more like what the dolphins were being used for in Johnny Mnemonic. I think they were like, I think it was like some sort of like drugged out dolphins they were using to control them to like do crazy experiments for Keanu Reeves. I don't know, but it was, listen to the episode. I haven't seen Johnny Mnemonic, but it's a very good episode of the podcast.
Right.
I think it's closer to that than, you know, masterminding acts of God.
Right. Because, yeah, okay.
I know this is...
I can see that.
This is, once again, off the rails. Let me just get my Dreamcast controller. Hold
but
on.
That's okay. Oh, I do think that Deep Blue Sea would be improved by the presence of skateboards, but I have yet to articulate exactly how.
I just don't understand, like, a shark, would they stand up so that their tail is on the skateboard, or would they just put their...
It's kind of like the how does a dog wear pants question.
Yeah, would they just lay on the skateboard on their stomach?
No. I think it would be kind of like Pac-Man, wherein all of the little researchers are
Pat's
the ghosts.
Face says it all right now.
Trying to get Pac-Man, and Pac-Man is the shark.
Wait. So the shark.
Where
did
the
skateboards
come in?
Wait.
And then no. Oh! The people are skateboarding around the skate park, and then when the skate park goes underwater, it's when everyone turns blue. The ghosts turn blue, and the shark is free to eat them. Because the sharks have the tactical advantage in the water.
And the shark is going around the map on the skateboard just chomping its stupid gob to pick up all the underwater scientists.
Okay.
Yeah.
That would be a great video game. I'd play that.
It's called Pac-Man. Play it.
No, I want sharks and researchers.
Okay, sharks and researchers.
Yeah, so I think this is a good way to merge Deep Blue Sea and Tony Hawk Pro Skater together in a master...
I want Sharkman and Miss Sharkman.
Oh,
Shark Boy and Lava Researcher.
Dude, great movie.
I never saw it.
So yeah, that would be my response to your question.
I'm into it. I'm very into it.
Yeah.
Colin. I'm trying to tie this back into my main point that people have a negative connotation for skateboarding and that Tony Hawk Pro Skater didn't really do anything to help that. Do you think that there is a negative connotation towards being a fan of Lord of the Rings and its various media
associations? Stuff.
I thought you were going to ask if there was a negative connotation toward orcs, and I was going to
yes. There definitely is.
Yeah, so the Uruks and the Olugs are not well reviewed in American contemporary society. However, being a fan of the Lord of the Rings, I don't think that it engenders the same vitriol I get for being a Trekkie.
Definitely not.
Or a Sonic the Hedgehog fan, especially now that set photos are leaking from the Sonic the Hedgehog film, I don't want to die. But the...
Sonic.
I would say that...
Sonic Panic.
It's... I would say that, generally speaking, no. It's still considered a nerdy thing, but I mean, Return of the King is still tied for most Oscar wins ever, and was one of the first movies, maybe the first movie to cross $1 billion in the box office. So it's kind of like when someone says, I'm a big nerd because I like the Avengers. Okay, but it's mainstream enough that it doesn't necessarily completely satisfy that definition.
Lord of the Rings is pretty embedded at this point.
It
culturally.
Is. The interesting thing about Lord of the Rings is that it has such cultural significance in a mainstream way, but also so much influence specifically in very geeky and nerdy domains. I mean, like Dungeons and Dragons was based primarily off Lord of the Rings. Orcs and hobbits are Tolkien's creations.
Halflings, okay.
Well, they're called halflings.
They're halflings.
in Dungeons and Dragons. I think originally they were called hobbits and they were forced to change it.
But they say halflings in Lord of the Rings too, though.
Halfling is a descriptor, but their race is hobbits.
Their race is definitely the hobbit. I'm just saying they use the word halfling to
describe
them. Yeah,
it's just to describe somebody of that stature, basically. As far as
looking, what's his name? The main Uruk-hai at the end of...
Midget didn't have the same ring to it.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. I think the movie sort of fucked up what an Uruk-hai is. I'm going to get caught in the weeds here. So generally speaking, I don't think there's a big negative connotation. Middle Earth games, the Middle Earth Shadow of Mordor and Shadow of War games, they're sort of interesting because whenever you see a licensed product, you don't expect it to go very well. And these games are generally well reviewed. The second less so because of some loot box controversy, but they fixed that.
I think the main thing there, though, is they weren't trying to emulate the movies or the books in any way. They were their own games set in that world.
Yeah,
which is why they ended up so much better than like a video game that was made about a movie like Aragorn. The video game sucked.
They understood what people liked about fantasy.
That's exactly it. And the crux of the game is I don't think it's Lord of the Rings setting. When it comes to game interaction, like personal interaction, I don't think that's it. I think it's the Nemesis system. Yeah. I think they could have put the Nemesis system to any game and people would have clung onto and said, this is novel, this is interesting. Somehow it wasn't hampered by the fact that it was a licensed game. People latched onto it and really enjoy it. There are tons of Lord of the Rings games, but I think by a mile, these are one of the most successful, aside from maybe the MMOs.
I don't know, man. I played the shit out of the Two Towers game.
Coming back to your question of like how it affects reputation, I mean, it's not a great analog just because skaters are real people. Half human, half wraiths, to my knowledge, are not. So we're not really looking at how this is going to impact the subject of the game.
Yeah.
But I think where games can often really affect the way that the public views something, particularly because of all the negative connotations, formerly all the neckbeard stereotypes, now the toxic culture stereotypes, like... It doesn't make it any worse, I can say that for sure. I don't think anybody's going to pat me on the back for playing Middle Earth. But in the way that Tony Hawk Pro Skater misrepresents the act of skateboarding and the hobby and sport of skateboarding, I don't think that many other games can have the impact on cultures and subgroups because Tony Hawk is representing a subgroup. It is representing people. Middle Earth isn't doing that. People can represent Middle Earth, but there's an incongruity there. Like I said, I picked it because it's sort of an antithesis to the problem you posed, but I think that carries over into some of its fundamental existence. It is counter.
Yeah, so my main like gripe with the world, I guess not my main gripe, but as a skater, my main gripe is the fact that like if you are seen riding a skateboard or just like if you mention that you skate, people just automatically assume that you're like a delinquent. You don't have any other function to society, that you like just sit there and fucking smoke weed and do kickflips. But a lot of the people that I follow who are pro skaters now, they own companies, they start their own brands. They're just like, they're businessmen who also skate. And a lot of the kids who are growing up are just doing it as a hobby. Like the fact that they like you walk down a street, any downtown area, and there's no skateboarding signs everywhere. It's like, it's not a crime to skateboard. People call the cops on people who skate all the time just because like
they're on a skateboard.
I don't know why. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
To an extent, if you're destroying public property, like grinding rails does damage them. So I understand that. Like, call the cops, whatever. But if I'm not endangering you in any way by being on my skateboard, why the fuck do you care?
I guess I want to ask you then, how do you think games like the Tony Hawk series and all its iterations or games like Skate actually impact you? Because generally the people, if somebody's going to play a video game about it, I'm sure it's not to beleaguer the hobby.
To me, it's not that the people who are playing the video games are the ones who have the negative connotation. I think it's the people who just know of the game and like have heard of it, that it kind of like belittles what skaters do now because they're like, oh, that's just a game, that's just whatever. Like it's to me, it's like it's a professional sport. Like people get paid to ride skateboards, they get paid to do the gnarliest tricks, just like athletes get paid to play basketball, albeit way fucking more money to play basketball because it's more marketable. But when people look at an actual skate competition and they see that the tricks like someone's only going and doing one trick at a time, it's like, oh, that's not as cool as going to play this video game or whatever. Yeah. Whereas if you're looking at a game like NBA 2K or Madden whatever year, you're pretty much doing the same sport as the people who are playing it live. It's just like you're the one who's doing it, whereas in skating, you're doing stuff that nobody could ever do.
Yeah.
To me, it makes it less interesting to watch a skate competition when you have experience with this game and don't have any experience with actually riding a skateboard. You lack that appreciation for just how hard it is to do those things.
That actually makes me think a little more of Jonavi's domain than my own, just because of the constant misrepresentation of the scientific community and the process of science and how frustrating that can be to people who care about it, especially in like sci-fi movies and action movies. I think it's even more damning in movies that are trying to talk about it seriously and they just completely miss the mark on realism. I guess I don't really consider the damage of that.
Because at the end of the day, like a game is there for somebody's entertainment and a movie is there for somebody's entertainment. So both of these things are going to be about the spectacle of what's going on. And in a movie's case, like the how dramatic the narrative ends up being, more so than they're concerned with, like, let's think about the actual ramifications of, like, this X, Y, and Z, because that's not why they made the movie. I don't think that the people who made Deep Blue Sea were deeply concerned with Alzheimer's research. that's just my personal opinion. I don't think any of those proceeds went to support any actual research. But when I do think that, like, similar to what you were saying about how it's kind of like affected the skateboarding community, I feel like movies like Deep Blue Sea, wherein, oh no, something bad happens because researchers went too far, that's completely the opposite of how the real world works, because like you need good medical researchers, not experimenting on sharks, but you know, like doing their research thing, and more often than not, that has had a positive impact as opposed to a negative one on the quality of life that people have. And I do think that, unfortunately, things that are classified as sci-fi, with notable exceptions, like I say, Star Trek does a good job of not doing this so much.
Did I hear Star Trek?
A lot of things that are like classified as sci-fi in the movie world, and like sci-fi and horror getting lumped together, it's because it's always this kind of like cautionary tale of like, what if we go too far? And that kind of thing, where that does have, I think, a negative impact on people's perceptions of like, hey, we just got this new capability, or like, we researched like this stuff and these are some like applications for it that could be useful. And it sort of just turns it around to be like, yeah, but what if it was actually bad if that happened?
Yeah, and that's where I think like those dissections can be appropriate. Not just like this is bad, but more about what is it? Okay, why is it good? Why is it bad? Certainly I there are some problems with some of the tones in Middle Earth, where the core mechanic of turning people to your side to manipulate the Nemesis system is your wraith half, the spirit of the elf Celebrimbor. He reaches into the mind of the orcs and superimposes his will onto them, and the term enslaved is used in the game at some times. When you actually know that, and I said I wasn't going to get in the weeds, but I'm going to get in the weeds a little bit. When you actually know what makes the orcs evil, like the root of evil as described in the Silmarillion in the context of the Tolkien universe, it's just Melkor's runaway greed and selfishness that
and
just
singing.
Like snowballs. And so, yeah, he did. He fucked up singing and he broke the world. But really, that's what it is. And when you see people say like good side, like the light side and everything like that, it's just people who are empathetic and kind and compassionate. So I guess if you look at it on a deep level, again, if you like are invested in this the way Pat's invested in skating and Jonavi is invested in sharks, apparently, you have that was a joke.
I just want to make it entirely clear that I absolutely suck at skateboarding, but it's still fun.
Well, the thing is,
but you care about it. Like, I'm not good at sharks, but I still care about them.
The game Middle-earth doesn't take the time to explain that really
Because it doesn't have the time to explain why
It doesn't take the time to explain that converting someone from one side to the other is not like some sort of horrible enslavement, which is a very problematic stance to take in a game, but really is just dependent on the fact that you're changing someone's mind from like greed, insecurity, anger, and jealousy to compassion, caring, and warmth. And I like the game doesn't totally bear that out, but like that is what it's based on. That's the mythos behind it. And I think all of our domains would benefit from simply taking a further elaboration of the content and communicating that to the audience.
Yeah, because
it was like, beautiful, Colin.
Oh, thank you.
Like, media sells and stuff because it's entertaining, but if more media made the extra like effort to get at some useful meaty content, that would be beneficial.
That's why they call it media.
Yes, Ben, we did it at the same time.
I mean, as long as we're marinating beef left and right.
Let's marinate this beef. Every single time we have a common beefing program now, we gotta say that.
We gotta marinate this beef.
And also, every time we get off track, we're just gonna be like, all right, let me press that Y button real quick.
Yeah, so I think that that's a really good point, because if more things were created for common distribution with the idea that we want this to, like, improve how we function as a society.
Yeah.
That would be a pleasant and beautiful thing. But in this world of commodification culture, that is not always the top priority.
Certainly.
And the top priority is frequently just to make something like, oh, man, that's ridiculous. Or like, oh, man, that's thrilling. So, or like...
That leads me to another question that I had for you, Genevieve, is that there's this whole genre of movies that are so bad that they're good, and we just actually had that episode.
Yeah, that was the last episode, wasn't it?
It was the last episode, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
It was a delight.
Do you think this movie was trying to be bad so that it was good, or do you think they were trying to roll with the public being scared of sharks and use that as like a fear factor?
I think this movie was not trying to be a bad movie. And dramatic point to dramatic point, I think the pacing of the movie is decent. Like, it's clearly not one of those movies that's trying to be so bad it's good. But because of the time that it sort of came out, like 1999, and
the height of the shark panic.
It was definitely capitalizing on some shark panic. And I think it succeeded to the extent that it did. It wasn't like a wildly popular movie or anything. It's one of those movies where there's a wide disparity between, like, oh, this is what the critics say, and this is how many people actually said they liked the movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's a perfectly fine flick as a flick.
Well, it did make $100 million, so.
Yeah.
I bet none of the proceeds went to Alzheimer's research.
Probably not.
I am almost certain that that didn't happen. And I think that if these movies were forced to do that, That would be a good first step to media advancing society.
That's true. But like, you are correct in that when I Google Deep Blue Sea, the Metacritic score is like a 54%, but then the Google users review is 88%.
Yeah, because people are like, fuck yeah, people running from sharks. I mean, when
sharks
I watch
exploding.
Movies like this movie or like any
exploding
of the Jurassic Park
shark, series,
like, I'm there going like, yeah, dinosaurs, get them. We can do it.
There is a Deep Blue Sea 2 that came out in July of this year.
Really?
Yep.
My goodness. I should take a peep at that just because I brought it up.
This is quite a development.
It is a very low budget movie. But yeah, I just figured I'd let you know.
Maybe that one's supposed to be more so bad it's good.
I know we have some user questions. It's not a lot. After that, if we have time, can we please spin our video games and skateboards in them?
Yes, we can. All right. Okay. We're going to go through this listener engagement as fast as possible because I really want to do that. Topher McPartlin has asked, has anyone ever attempted to recreate Rodney Mullen's Proving Ground skate line within the game? So what I think he's referring to is when Rodney Mullen comes in the game Tony Hawk Proving Ground, he does this really cool like kickflip one-footed nose manual into another trick out, and then he does another trick where he flips into what's called like a rail stand. the board is on two wheels and he's standing on top of the other two wheels and riding it across. And as far as I know, those are both, maybe not the one-footed manual, but I think the rail stall is possible. And I don't know if anybody's ever tried to do it, but you definitely can't do it in Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2. And you probably could, I'm going to guess Proving Ground was the first one where that was even remotely possible.
Yeah, because there were a lot of mechanics that weren't around in the Pro Skater games, like the ability to revert came out, and I think, actually, that came out in, like, Pro Skater 3, I think, like, when you come back down on a vert ramp to switch your board around and have that continue a combo, and then the boards was Thug. I haven't played Proving Grounds,
I'm really confused as to why you couldn't just go into a manual without reverting. Theoretically, like, it would be just as easy, if not harder, to revert your board and then go into a manual, but I think it was just a mechanic that they wanted to put in.
Is there any discrepancy in, like, how easy that was to animate or how it looked? It,
you have to spin the character and the board around, and then you just pop into a manual. So I don't think it makes it hard, but
from an animation standpoint, switching from one orientation to another, like which way you're facing on your board, that's already baked in. Yeah. That's something you can do. Mm-hmm. So a revert was just applying that to the animations of coming out of the air onto the thing. So probably not too much computationally.
To me, that's just like them trying to make the game slightly harder by adding a mechanic in rather than just like making the gameplay. But
yeah, it becomes like a combo timing thing.
Yeah. I think in like the underground games is where they started to add in the different manual combinations. Like when you're doing a manual, you could press buttons and do different tricks, like doing a Casper stall and maybe even a rail stall.
Was Proving Grounds before or after the Thug game?
It was Thug Underground. Thug 2, American Wasteland, American Wasteland 2, Proving Ground, Project 8, I'm pretty sure.
I don't think I've played anything after Thug 2, actually.
The American Wastelands were pretty fun. The second one got, like, way too out there for me, but they were still, like, enjoyable.
Crazy.
But, yeah, they go on to finish saying that this is an all-time favorite game for them, and I would agree, Topher. It's a fucking amazing game, so thank you for your comment. Rich Baldes, I think. Baldes.
Maybe. Yeah, he's going to be our next listener pick, too. I should tell him.
Oh, yeah, I rolled that one.
Yeah, you did. I got to say, that was a clusterfuck editing that because you guys forgot when to roll the die. Like, that was so obnoxious to cut together.
I'm just saying, you guys are problems to me.
All I'm saying is that, like, I shouldn't be the one who's got to roll every time, but here I am with the dice. Maybe next time I'm going to rig it.
Listen, I have 20 sets of polyhedral dice in my bedroom. I could
only
roll.
Have three, but anyway, Rich, my homie Rich right here, is saying, finished the game and unlocked all the stuff in it before I realized I could string tricks together with tail grinds and nollies. I would just find a pool or half pipe and do as many tricks as I could before time expired. And let me tell you, Rich, I did the same exact fucking thing. And then finally I was playing with my brother one day and he's like 4 years older than me and he does this combo and I was just like, how? And then he showed me, and then from that day forward I was hooked. Like, I was trying to make it so I got every single high score in one combo while also trying to get like all the skate letters in that combo, and it was addicting. But yes, it would have been a lot easier if I had known that too when I was a kid, and then I figured it out.
Yeah, I figured it out pretty quickly. From the big thing
Hashtag
for me,
big Zach.
The big thing for me was learning how to get the wall ride down perfectly, and the level of the school really teaches you to do that because you have to wall ride over some bells. And
oh, geez.
God, I spent so many days getting that right. But dude, it lets you get some gnarly because you can use the momentum from the wall ride to clear like, these sick fucking gaps,
which doesn't make sense.
It doesn't, but it's really cool.
I was pleased watching the Tony Hawk vids as to how cartoonish it was as far as, like, choices made for the purpose of entertainment as opposed to, like, reflect real things.
Oh, let me ask you then. Did you enjoy watching the real skate videos?
I did because I was very impressed. My balance is very bad. Yeah. I tried to skateboard once and failed miserably. So anyone who can do anything on a real skateboard is amazing to me. So, I mean, I was pretty impressed.
All right, cool.
By everything, just making basically. Sure. Yeah.
Brian Dollard says, what is the best level and why is it the school? You're right. The school is like the best one.
I don't know.
There's actually a way to open the gymnasium My biggest gripe with school is that it didn't have enough vert, and then I found out you could open the gym and there was a bowl in there.
There's a half pipe pool and there's a pool.
Yeah. So it's really cool. Like
school's pretty good. I really like Marseille.
Marseille is really cool. I just didn't like the competition levels.
I like that one because there's a lamppost that you can knock over, and then there's a secret underground fountain area with $50 in it. It's actually got like $150 in it. I don't know.
I just like all the levels that have those secret areas that you could find. Like in the warehouse one, I think in Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3, when you grind the helicopter blades.
No, that's two.
That's two? You grind the helicopter blades, the helicopter takes off, which makes no fucking sense. And then it unlocks a little thing.
I don't know. Is the school my favorite level?
School is definitely my favorite level, for sure.
It taught me, I think I learned the most about that game, doing the school. New York is just frustrating.
New York's annoying as fuck.
After New York was Venice Beach. And
Venice was really nice. I like Venice.
Venice was cool. I think I like Venice just because of the magic bum and all the vert gaps you gotta clear.
Was there a least favorite for you guys?
Oh, probably the downhill level from whichever.
That was first one. I like that one a lot.
I don't like that one just because it's impossible to go back. Like,
well, no, but like once you jump at the end, if you like jump in the water, it splashes you back to like the top of the hill or something like that. Like you can loop the level.
I don't know. I like the mall one a lot from Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1, which was a downhill one because there was so much stuff to do and there was enough flat areas that you could go back if you wanted to. But downhill one in like San Francisco or whatever that one was, it was just too hard.
I don't know. I didn't like Pro Skater. I didn't love it very much.
The one problem I had with Venice was the fact that there was so much sand, and when you land in the sand, it like kills pops you back to the start.
You know what? I never thought about it. I always thought the school was overrated, but Brian, you have forced me to consider this, and I think that might be my favorite level too.
You've been mainstreamed.
This is a moment of introspection I wasn't expecting.
Sometimes the mainstream is correct, though. Like, sometimes. Yeah. Not all the time, but sometimes. Anyway.
I mean, you have to be open to the possibility.
When I pee, I prefer the mainstream over the one that goes off to the side, because then I just have to clean that up.
Yeah, dude. Anyway, Devin McConnell agrees with you, Colin, that Dreamcast version is the best one, although there is a little-known version that was an Xbox launch title. I will still stick to my PlayStation roots. I had a lot of fun playing it on that.
Pat, I'm going to do something you're really going to like here.
Okay.
I have Metacritic's The Best Video Games of All Time pulled up.
Yep.
At number one is Legend of Zelda, The Ocarina of Time, overrated game, whatever. Number two.
I mean, of all the Zelda ones, I think Ocarina of Time was the best one.
Number two is Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2. For PlayStation. That is the number two video game of all time. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 for the Dreamcast clocks in at number 11. So it is impressive that the same game makes it on this list twice.
Because it's literally the best game of all time.
It's so good. I think with the Dreamcast, the loading times may have killed it. I know that was my problem.
PlayStation was pretty quick.
Yeah.
But the graphics were a lot better on Dreamcast, so that's probably part of it.
I was mostly enthralled by the soundtrack, which actually I still listen to most of those songs. It definitely shaped my punk phase quite a bit. And I would probably argue that I'm still in my punk phase, but we'll figure that out later. Anyway, Devin, I disagree, but your right to like the Dreamcast is unalienable. inalienable? One of those.
Inalienable. Well, fun fact, Devin and I are working on a video game history program, a video game history project that's going to be part of the Common Geeking program. So,
is this the guy who chose Sonic the Hedgehog as a topic and then ripped you apart for it?
No, I chose Sonic the Hedgehog as a topic and he ripped me apart for it.
Okay, gotcha.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
And then we had one more comment.
Did you know that that's the name of like a growth agent?
Sonic?
Yeah. No, there's a protein in developmental neuroscience called Sonic Hedgehog.
Yeah, it's the hedgehog protein. Yeah. My friend at work was telling me about this because she's a nurse, and she found this out, and it's named after Sonic the Hedgehog.
That's pretty funny.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, it is. I forget what it does, but it's a fast-acting enzyme.
It's a growth protein.
Yeah.
So when you're a little babby and your brain is growing, it like tells the neurons where to go. And then it's also a signaling protein in flies.
Interesting.
Yes.
We have one more comment that Colin neglected to include, but
I
made sure that I talked about this.
Real MVP.
This one comes from real, my girlfriend,
most valuable
Abby.
Pat.
Yeah. My girlfriend Abby says, by choosing you, as in me, do I automatically choose the skate life? And yes, Abby, you do. I will be probably trying to have you ride a skateboard at some point. I'm definitely going to be sending you skate videos to watch because they're just fucking sick. And I refuse to stop dressing like a skater, so you kind of have to also be part of that life.
At least aesthetically.
Hey, love you.
Wait, I heard that that in some city settings, shark wheels can make it a little easier to ride. So
shark wheels are weird. They do increase the surface area, I'm pretty sure, of the wheel, which gives you better grip.
Why are they called shark wheels?
Because they were genetically engineered to be more intelligent skateboards.
Oh,
skateboards alive!
Anyway, we don't really have time for this, but you already got my mind on it, so that we have to at least just like quickly say one video game we'd rather have with skateboards.
Okay, one video game. Okay. Johnny, can you go first? Because I need to ruminate on this. There are so many options.
Okay.
Oh, I know.
This is high stakes pressure. I have not played a ton of video games. I really like my 80s arcade games. I must stick with my shark/skateboards incorporated into Pac-Man idea, because really I feel like that's a solid concept. So I'm going to go with that.
I have two that I can't choose between. So I would really like to see skateboards in like a fighting game a la Super Smash Brothers, because I feel like that movement would be pretty interesting, and like building levels around ramps and stuff would give it a little bit of a more dynamic rather than just two-dimensional and vertical. It would like start adding rotational shit in, which would be cool.
How do you wave dash on a skateboard?
That's, you gotta figure it out, bro.
Maybe in that Paper Mario game.
Oh,
that would
be interesting.
That would work.
Yeah. Okay, what's really your other like one, real quick? I would see it in Destiny, though. I can just purely because I play a lot of Destiny, I would love to just ride around on a skateboard with my bow out, just like shooting bitches in the face.
Dude, we already have the sparrows. We already have like the always summonable V.
Yeah, but you can't shoot off of a sparrow. I want to be riding a skateboard and
I'm very disturbed that when
time.
You said shoot, you just kind of make like a jerk off motion very aggressively.
Not. You jerk off in a circular motion?
And at first it wasn't a circle. It was just straight
was
up and down.
I was doing this.
Okay, well,
this is me drawing an arrow and then shooting it. Like,
I would really like to see skateboards.
The ghost penis has gone digitally too.
I would really like to see skateboards in BioShock. Partly because the game is so serious that the zany element of skateboarding would just be hilariously fun. Two, first-person skateboarding sounds like a fucking nightmare, and I want to try it. Dude. Three, BioShock Infinite and its expansions have the Skyrail system, and you can get on that with the hook. But what if I could smash a gnarly fucking nose blunt all the way across Colombia? That'd be sick.
Nose blunt is your go-to grind?
It sounded like it was one of the most outlandish ones.
It's my favorite grind, so like I'm cool with it. But
there you go. I'm just pandering for the gold star.
I was just curious as to why you chose the nose blunt. Anyway.
Because that's the only one. Because you have to nose blunt the awning in the Philadelphia level of Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2, and that's ingrained in my fucking brain.
Yeah. My all-time dream is if I ever like got good at skateboarding, it would be to land a nollie inward heel into a back nose blunt down some stairs. But
that sounds so complicated.
It is very complicated. And I will never, ever fucking do that. But that's my dream trick right there.
We should go to the ratings.
We should go to the ratings. But thank you. This was probably my favorite episode to record of all time.
This has been so freaking delightful.
Glad that we could be here with you to
thank you so much.
Hear your thoughts about skateboarding and stuff.
We're here for you, Pat.
That did kind of like derail our listener questions. So we should press Y real quick and get back.
Oh,
if you want to have your own question or comment read on the show, we make weekly posts on Facebook and Twitter where you can comment or reply. I don't think anybody ever replies on Twitter.
No, we're pretty bad about the Twitter thing because we don't have anybody, but whatever. But yeah, Facebook's the place to go. I put a lot of work into Google image searching some pictures to send you.
It's a pretty good ad too. I'll give them that. But yeah, just comment, share, like. We'll be sure to talk about you. We appreciate you. We love you.
Thanks for paying attention.
Yeah. Uh, move on to the rating section, though. So thank both of you, Colin and Jonavi, for a gnarly discussion. Now we move on to the rating.
Thick, bro.
We're going to begin by having each of our representatives rate the topic on a scale of...
Hidden tapes. Hidden tapes.
We could do hidden 1 to 5 hidden tapes, or we could do 1 to 5...
1 to 5 dollar bills hidden in a pile of bullshit?
Damn.
1 to 5? Why is there so much money around?
True. That's a good point.
Skateboarders don't have money either. Like
people just leave it lying around, floating in midair.
Yeah.
It's not very fiscally responsible.
I think we're going to go 1 to 5 hidden tapes. That, what?
What if you did 1 to 5 letters in skate?
Oh, true. Yeah, spell out skate.
Yeah, there we go.
Give me... from S to skate.
Okay, please do not actually record this in the episode. Whoever's editing this, maybe it's me, I don't know. Include the sound the game makes whenever you get a letter after every letter we say. Please, love you, thank you, bye. Mwah.
Thinking ahead.
Anyway, Colin, why don't you hit me with that rating?
So I'm gonna give this letter fuck.
Are you okay, Colin?
Ah! I've had a long day at work. We're about to go into iPhone launch week, and I'm dying. Yeah. I'm gonna give this game S K A T E.
I was gonna say, if you don't give me that E, if you don't give me that E, boy,
I think I have to give it skate because. One, I've spent so much fucking time in this game. Two, I don't regret any of the time I've fucking spent in this game. Three, it is the number 2 video game in history. Four, I can 100% a campaign in like 30 minutes. On the Dreamcast with its awful loading times. So I love just the brainless fun you can have in this game, but also the amount of challenge that you find in it, which is true of most video games, but it struck such a nice balance of... a reverence and somehow respect, two very contrasting things, because it's respecting the artist, but it's irreverent to reality. And I think that that is wonderful, is very fun. And I'm glad that we had like an actually thought-provoking discussion relating this to two very disparate things.
So yeah, I would thank you for rating this game so high.
I rate it skate out of skate.
Skate out of skate. That's my sound. Honestly, beautiful. Editor, if you want, you can take that and just use that instead of the actual sound. But
lovely,
Jonavi, let me hear that.
Yeah,
later. It's gonna be hard to spell for the episode title. It's inevitably going to be.
I'm gonna call this a scat. Skibidi bidi boo. Shibidi bidi bop.
Full circle.
Scat man. I have never played this game. I heard of this game before. It does enjoy a lot of popularity. A lot of people have had a lot of fun playing it. I would say that I am not a person who is like long engaged by this kind of game of like, okay, something weird is happening with how you like do a trick or whatever, and then you do it the best you can till the end and then you get a score on it. Like, I prefer more narrative kind of stuff, and the narrative just seems to be like, yeah, win stuff, which is a lot of games.
You would probably like the underground games, because they actually
have a story. Yeah, conceivably.
There is a story, but also those games are hybridized with the Jackass crew, which could be this a turn on or off for different
people.
Dude,
I love Jackass, man.
Sure.
But skating's Bam Margera is pretty fun.
Yeah, and then also, I had another comment, but I forgot about it. But anyway, it seemed pretty solid. I enjoy it for its cultural relevance. I also enjoyed our discussion on it, but having not actually had the childhood memories you guys have with these games, I cannot have the same passion.
Nostalgia
for
is
it.
A hell of a drug.
At this point, it's not even nostalgia. I still enjoy these games when I pick them up, which...
Oh, yeah, I play them, like, to this day.
...goes beyond a lot of games I played as a kid. The only games that are like that for me are Halo, Sonic, and Tony Hawk.
Yeah, I like Halo, Crash Bandicoot, Tony Hawk are kind of like my shit.
Because Crash Bandicoot was Sonic's ass game, as it was called during development. If you want to learn more about that, tune into episode 19 of the Comic Geeking Program.
I can live with a scat, but as long as I got that landscape, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, scat means poop, right?
Yes, I know scat means poop, Colin. Jesus fuck.
Teehee bodily functions.
How did we do
that's
this
another
week?
Title. Teehee bodily functions.
I stopped keeping track in the summary. We fucked this one up real bad.
We fucked it real good. Anyway.
How'd we do?
Yeah, it is about that time where I'm going to award a gold star student. And I think I'm going to give out a golden skateboard just because, like, I have to. I absolutely have to do that.
You can do it.
I'm going to give this reward based on the person I think best explained why the theme was the way it is. And that'll make a little bit more sense in a second when I say that I'm giving this award to Colin Ketchin.
Oh, yes!
Woo! Good job.
Thank you.
While, Jonavi, you brought up some very excellent points and also probably spawned the funniest part of this episode with adding skateboards to video games. Colin, when prompted about the actual theme of why there's a negative connotation towards skating, kind of like just dug into the heart of the matter and really touched my heart a little bit. So
yeah, I'm used to you shitting on me, and you had actual positive, like, affection.
So yeah, I feel
I'm gonna hang on to that
for
the rest of this abusive podcast experience I share with you.
This one time, I feel like when you made me feel that, I couldn't avoid giving you the gold star student.
His heart grew 3 sizes that day.
Just like the ghost penis on my screen.
I think that's grown in a different way, but anyway.
But that about wraps it up. Thank you for listening to the Common Geeking Program. I'm your host, Patty Ice. If you want, you can find me on Instagram, at Patty Ice Official. You can find me on Twitter at Purerifery, because I was stupid and picked a name that I didn't like, and now I can't change it, because thanks, Twitter. Anyway,
I've
enjoyed
Purerifery.
I don't like it
fun.
That much.
That's
mostly
clever.
Just because I don't listen to Purerifery anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
But Patty Ice is eternal. Anyway, I've been joined by...
Hi, my name is Colin Ketchin, and you can find me at Sonical... Bloop!
Sonical!
You can find me at Sonical and K is a lot of things. I also made the mistake of entwining my identity with a fandom.
But at least you still like that fandom.
Yeah, I mean, Sonic Forces almost did me in, but Sonic Mania and Sonic Mania Plus...
Sonic 06 didn't almost do you in?
That was... I'm a resilient fellow. So you can find me at that on, like, Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and Xbox and a bunch of places. Also, I'm working on redoing the site. It'll be visible to you hopefully by the time this episode airs. Depends on how long it takes GoDaddy to release the domain.
Fuck GoDaddy.
No, they've been pretty good to us this whole time, but
stop, Daddy.
But we're
no! So many good titles.
Stop, Daddy. Oh, damn it. Damn it.
I'm sorry I interrupted you, but it had to be said.
No, it's so good. It's just so good. I can't do anything about it. Okay, comicgeekingprogram.com. It's going to have character bios. It's going to have other surprise shows you've got coming up. It's going to have
surprise.
Gold Star Student and show info and places to find us. It's going to be cool. So that's another place you can find me.
Alrighty. My name is Jonavi Iyer. I am at JKIyer1 on Twitter. That's pretty much it. Thanks for listening to my voice.
I was really hoping for an episode title that would come from early on in the episode, because it always just comes out at the very end. And I thought we were going to make it. And then you said, stop, Daddy. And it's fucking over.
Stop, Daddy.
I mean, we don't know until we take that little poll, so
this is true.
Okay.
We're gonna figure that out. But anyway, next week our episode will be hosted by the one, the only. Is this your first host? No, it's not your first host. But it's the first host that I'm a part of, Jonathan.
Hey.
Yeah, last one you did was Inglourious Basterds, and I fucking love that episode.
Yeah.
You were hilarious.
I'm glad. But yes, I will be hosting next week. We're going to be talking about Courage the Cowardly Dog and anthropomorphized main characters.
It's going to be
amazing. So I'm pretty excited for that.
Wait, is Keenan on
Please
that episode?
Tune in.
Nope.
Damn it.
It's me.
Because he finally learned how to pronounce specifically, and now that's over, so I'm sad. But I really want to hear him try to say anthropomorphized.
Anthropomorphized?
Yes.
I think he'd manage. But
yeah, we'll see.
Who knows? Anyway, tune in next week on the 12th of October when that one airs. Thank you all, as in the two of you, for being on this episode with me. And thank you all, listeners, for gracing us with the past roughly an hour of your time. We really appreciate it. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Geeking Program, especially on that Twitter. We need to get those follows up, if you know what I'm saying.
We need to get any follows.
Yeah, I follow.
Yeah, me too. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any engagement.
It's just a little digital parade.
Yeah, any engagement, such as sharing the posts, tagging us, tweeting hashtag CGP, retweeting, literally any sort of engaging with our pages will enter you into a raffle where you get to pick the topic for a future episode. Reviewing us on Apple Podcasts is also a critical help to growing our show. Gets a lot more people to see in the Apple Podcasts app that we are not a total joke. And if you review us, then we'll read your review on the air. Anyway, thank you all.
Let me check and see if we have anything new.
I'm fairly certain we don't, but who knows?
It's always worth checking. And at the very least, I'll just feel bad about myself. We're still just a five-star podcast. Darn.
We are 5 stars, but we need to get that sample size up. Anyway, again, thank you all for listening, subscribing, sharing. We love you. We appreciate you. Come back next week. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah.
Lights out.
Ba-na-na-na-na.
Bye.
Ba-na-na-na-na. That's where May 16th by Lagwagon would come in.
I'm going to stop my recording now.
This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by Patrick Brem, joined by the representatives Colin Ketchin and Jonavi Iyer. This episode is sponsored by Kickflip Starter. The podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt, with this episode edited by me, Jeff, and featuring original music by Colin Ketchin. Next week, we're going to be talking about Courage the Cowardly Dog and anthropomorphized characters. Kind of wish I was on that one. Oh well. So be sure to tune in for that on the 12th of October. That's the day before my birthday. Happy almost birthday, Jeff. Woo. And of course, as always, thank you for listening to this.
Colin, why is only part of your screen blurred out?
That's... Is there a penis on part of my screen that I'm not aware of?
It's weird.
I can't... I've lost my preview.
Oh, no.
Wait, hold on. I've lost my... Wait.
You've got a peen poltergeist.
When I go full screen, it's gone. But, like...
Can you... Am I visible?
Yeah, you're visible.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can't see my own preview anymore. I don't know what's happening. I don't know what happened to my preview.
The view of your screen on my screen has changed. But yeah, you are visible.
All right. I'll just have to take your guys' word for it and hope that there is not a floating ghostly
penis.
Well,
it's gone now.
Okay.
But it was like below the picture on your wall was just this spot that looked like there was a penis blurred out.
Oh.
It was very strange. Anyway.
Spooky.
Let's move on to our summary.